All right, everybody, as I promised, we are live here now. I just got finished with that pod. And first of all, I want to play a little trailer like first before we actually do go live. I want to pop a link into the chat. What the actual link is going to be is a trailer that was made for a small filmmaker in New York. I believe in the city somewhere or upstate. I'm not sure. We will find that out in a little bit here, but first I'm going to play this trailer live on air, and then we will talk in a few minutes after the trailer. All right. And let me get back on the right screen here. I'm getting all kinds of things messed up here, so it's a little difficult sometimes, but I think I got it now. I want to welcome, let me get this out of here. It says, straight out of Brooklyn, New York, the new sci-fi feature filmed by 17-year-old director and producer Natalie Gennaro with her father, Francis X. Gennaro. Jeremy Moore, a computer genius, was brutally mangled by a vicious gang. The outcome of his savage acts caused Jeremy to become a quadriplegic. However, unbeknownst to the young genius, he has developed telekinesis through his newfound powers. He lets out a fury of revenge. This spawned powerplegic. Welcome to the show, Frank. Hello. And Natalie Gennaro.
Hi, John.
Hi. I see you've got some friends that are already on the video stream there.
Really cool.
Quite a few watchers and listeners, probably also from my radio show. Some people go in and watch and listen sometimes. But welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. We love being here.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking us.
We're yes. on a show in our house.
Yeah, well, I'm doing my show in my house too. But
I also would like to clarify, I'm not 17 anymore.
No.
I grew up.
Yes. So,
she went to college and everything.
Yeah.
Yes, so, you are currently 22 years old, but you told me just a few minutes ago you were 17 when you made the movie.
Yes, I was 17 years old when I made the movie. I was a junior in high school. And I was working on film since I was 12 years old. So then I was with my dad, and I was like, oh, he was already writing a whole bunch of features, and he directed another feature called Torture Me No More when I was younger. So then I said, Dad, I've already done a whole bunch of shorts. Let's do a feature together.
Yeah. we were going to do this film called Eight Deadly Sin, and then she didn't like the script.
No.
And so she read this, Dad, let's do this other script. I said, okay. And the first one was about religious zealots. I guess she didn't. Why didn't you like that script anymore?
I didn't really think the language of the script, the dialogue, sounded realistic enough. Whereas with Powerplegic, I felt like he had more of a grasp of like the language kind of thing.
Right.
My dad is, he's like a science guy, so there's a lot of like tech talk kind of thing. Yeah. So, but it made a lot of sense, even when he was like sci-fying it up kind of thing, like making up things, it still made sense within the story. Like, oh, well, this makes sense, whereas,
They did that in Ghostbusters. They kept on doing science fiction talk, and it really made no sense, but you know.
Actually,
one thing I did in it, which made a lot of sense, was brainwave reading. They're doing that out in Berkeley now. It's amazing that I was thinking when I wrote it a few years back. I was thinking of brainwaves probably coincide with. Spoken words, so like a word would go with a certain brainwave that would come out of your brain, and a computer can probably interpret that the way like Dragon does, like voice recognition programs. I said, why not And it ends up being the truth, you know, yes. Right now.
Why not brain recognition?
Probably within 10 years, there's going to be brainwave recognition. And you won't even have to talk into a computer. You'll just read the thoughts and it goes straight into the computer.
Well, I can't swear to it, but I think I've seen something in the last few months that actually they may have perfected it already.
Oh, cool.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, well, you know, I wrote about that, you know, science fiction, when you, I guess it's more futuristic, what do you call that, futurism, what is it called, it's not science fiction, it's just like you kind of predict what's going to happen in science in the
yeah,
future.
Yeah, 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 well, some people call that transhumanism also.
Oh, okay.
But, which one of you two were the first to actually get into filmmaking?
Well, no, me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually, I'm a musician, you know. Like, for instance, that music is that's me on guitar and stuff like that. So I did a lot of work with filmmakers, and I just knew a lot about filmmaking, being a photographer. You know, a lot of times when you, like, any kind of artist, you do a lot of things, you know. So, and filmmaking, what filmmaking is, there's a lot of disciplines, you know, photography, sound, but really photography and audio, you know, and you know, I just kind of got into it. I did a music video. I decided to do it because I knew so much about it to begin with. I also worked on McDonald's commercials and a lot of commercials way back in the early 90s. Doing some assistant editing and all that at a commercial house in the city, and so then after that I did some I did some jingle work, and then that's about it. And then I did some work for independent film guys back then, and then I decided to just do it myself. Back in the early 2000s, and I did a music video for a friend, and then I started doing music videos for these other guys. Then I did a short film, and I said, let me just do a feature film, and I went right into it, you know. And basically, I did my first script. I tried to get a writer at that time, and I couldn't get somebody, so I just decided to write the script myself. That film got distribution.
From Brain Damage.
Yeah.
Which is our distribution company right now.
Yeah, we're using Brain Damage again. And the guys, Darren Ramage over there. And so now here we are today. Our next films, I want only to work with known actors and, you know, step it up a bit. And, you know, I have new 4K equipment. And I have all kinds of audio stuff. It's really great. You know, I love doing it. And that, you know, like, you know, I basically show Nat how to do things, and she's a quick learner, and she just does it. You know, it's not hard.
Yeah. I mean,
everybody thinks filmmaking is like a crazy, difficult. It is, I guess, you know.
It is.
I feel like it's not that difficult.
It is, if you don't know what you're doing, right?
Well, I guess so, but, you know, it's not that hard to learn. I mean, you know, photography and audio, I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of times I think, you know, people go to school and, you know, there has to be an explanation to spend $100,000, you know?
Yeah, that's just on the education.
It's harder than it really should be.
That's just on the education. Then you got to spend another $500,000 on equipment.
Well, actually, the way equipment is going these days, a $4,000 camera in a good cinematographer's hand can look very, 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 very close to a $50,000 or $100,000 camera. I mean, you just have to light it properly, you know, just, and it's mainly the actors. The actors have to look great. You know, you can have a great image, and those actors stink, and forget about it.
Well, You being over there in New York, there are plenty of actors that live over there.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, when we auditioned over 400 actors to get 9 actors here in New York, and, you know, a lot of them are good, you know, and we had to turn down guys who were good. But, you know, they didn't fit the part as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think everyone gets into acting at one point. Almost everyone gets into acting at one point when they're in New York. Like, even I was actually an actor when I was a child, so I was, like, really involved in, like, acting classes and stuff like that. I don't know. One of my things was, like, in a newspaper when I was, like, 7 and whatever. But when I was around 10, my dad did Torture Me No More. So I remember the first time I was on, like, a set of filmmaking. It was, like, a really graphic scene where a guy is, like, you know.
Well, which one?
With Chris. The scene where, like, they're brutalizing the kid.
You were there?
I was there when they were brutalizing one of the characters, which is my dad's friend at the time.
Well, Chris was doing it.
Yeah, Chris was doing it.
And you weren't scared?
Nope. I was actually really enthralled by it, like, excited. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
It was the rape scene.
No, it was not that scene. It was another graphic scene where they were, like, chopping.
What, chopping the guy's hand off?
Yeah, and stuff like that.
Oh, that was nice.
No, it was really, it was everywhere, whatever. But it was a really cool scene.
Yeah, but
if
she sees the film now, she can't even look at it. You know, she's a real one.
Well, you know, Frank, I was going to, you know, I took a look at that trailer that was passed to me earlier today. I had, like, you know, a little over 3 hours, and I started to look at that trailer, and I was going to watch the movie, and I decided not to. I don't really care for that kind of stuff.
Actually, the movie's not that scary. You know, I mean, the trailer kind of shows you what the movie is, but there are moments in that movie that, you know, like, people, like, hide their faces and stuff, you know. But,
yeah, there's this one screwdriver scene or multiple screwdriver scenes that people can't really take because it's so graphic, even though, but we
because
actually...
Because the screwdriver is making noise, you know, the noise makes you scared.
It was electric drill, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an electric
drill. It's kind of like what they did in Scarface, where I'm not sure if you.
Oh, that was a chainsaw in Scarface.
Yeah, the chainsaw.
The sound of the chainsaw. And the
blood splattering everywhere. Yeah, that was kind of freaky.
that was funny. Brian De Palma. They weren't going to release that if he didn't change that scene.
Well, that was a. I think they had two versions of it. They had a R-rated version, and then they had the X-rated version, or the NC-17, whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw the NC. Who knows what I saw? But anyway, but I know how it's done, so I never get scared of any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I also tend to like to do. I don't do any graphics, you know. People tend not to like CGI anymore, you know. So our movies are very little computer graphics. You know?
So yeah, people would probably rather see the dummy get chopped up than some computer generated thing, right?
Yeah. You know, like that's why I think zombie movies do so well, because there's very little computer graphics and people, you know, like that.
Yeah. Why did you initially pick the horror genre from movie making?
Yeah, I love it. A lot of people pick the horror genre just to think that it's the easiest one, which is, I think, stupid, because then you can tell the film is really awful.
Then it's like the cookie cutter.
the cookie cutter
scripts. You know, oh, girl is scared. Falls, gets stabbed to death. By monster serial killer guy. I mean,
I love Alfred Hitchcock, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. I loved horrors, and since I was a little kid, I used to love the old ones too. Like in one of my favorite movies of all time was The Uninvited, 1944, Ray Milland. And, I like things like, what is it, The Room Has a Thousand Eyes? You know, it's Edward G. Robinson. and The Big Clock. I like a lot of. I've gone actually. The films I'm gonna I write now are more psychological thrillers because it's more real. You know, I personally get more scared at something like Fatal Attraction than I do any
horror. Right, something that can really happen.
You know, than a movie like Mama or something like that. Mama's a really good movie, but I'd rather see Orphan.
Yeah, Orphan's great.
Or something like that. Though our next movie, we're going to use a ventriloquist for the dummy. That's always scary.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a psychological...
It's more psychological than anything else.
Right, because you're really getting into the mindset, and it's a very scary thing.
And we just use the dummy as a device to push the movie forward more than anything else. Yeah. Personality.
It's not like the dummy is the one controlling everything. It's that the dummy is like...
It's like his best friend.
Yeah, whereas he's actually still the killer, you know?
Yeah, and...
So it can really happen.
He's just looking at the dummy mainly as a companion more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you worried about... wasn't there somebody that already kind of made a horror movie with a ventriloquist dummy?
Oh, there have been so many movies with ventriloquist dummies, but...
Generally speaking, it's the dummies that control the ventriloquist, you know, it's...
Right.
I mean, it started with Dead of Night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing a scene in Dead of Night, and it was... And it was exactly what Psycho. Psycho completely stole it. Alfred Hitchcock stole something from Dead of Night. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And the basic idea of Psycho. And it was really funny. It was a psychiatrist in the room saying the dummy was him and he was the dummy.
It was the same monologue at the end of Psycho.
Yeah, it was. And instead of his mother, it was a dummy. And this guy completely was taken over by the dummy, and it was a great ending. But nobody knows this. I'm like surprised that nobody knows that Alfred Hitchcock stole this of one of his greatest movies. Psycho is fantastic anyway. It doesn't matter.
Actually, I think it's the most well known of all of his movies.
Yeah, everybody thinks that Alfred Hitchcock's movies are Psycho. That was his only.
That was the first slasher.
Well, The Birds was another psychological thriller, wasn't it?
Another well-known one.
Yeah, but you know, before then he had more
psychological.
Yeah, they're just regular movies, you know.
There was Vertigo. So I'm trying to remember some of the ones that I've seen. I've seen Vertigo. I've seen Psycho. I've seen The Birds. Just. I don't know. Try to remember some of them.
Well, there's Strange. One of my favorites is Strangers on a Train.
That's a great
from
one.
1950.
Rebecca.
Then there's the first American movie with Rebecca, and then it's like a love story, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but he makes it a thriller.
Yeah.
And,
a lot of his movies are more psychological thrillers, you know.
Of course.
You know.
I love A Lady Lady Vanishes. That's great.
One.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Do you worry about
which is actually Alfred Hitchcock's favorite film, and it's one of my favorite films that he did. It's his favorite film that he ever did, which is Shadow of a Doubt, which stars this girl who's like has this connection with her uncle who's like a serial killer.
We're real film fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 600 films in my device.
Uh huh. Yeah. Do you worry about like being so stereotypical in movies, trying not to do what so many other people have done.
We always consider, oh, that was done before, you know,
right.
But you know, like,
We always like to go against stereotypes and going against
I like to use stereotypes.
I don't, you like to play with stereotypes. But I like to try and go completely against stereotypes. In my films, like in one of my films, The School of Fish, it's actually trying to go completely against stereotypes. It stars, and that's a Actually, I did that for my senior project, which was starring a girl with ADHD, undiagnosed ADHD, trying to do the SATs. And
oh, this is drama. This is not a horror.
I
do the horror. She does the normal things.
Right. Well, I do dramas and...
I do garbage.
Okay. Well, I do dramas, and they're much different than horrors, but we're doing a horror together, though, so we intertwine our
stuff. That was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
We were yelling at each other and everything. We're nice now.
We're nice now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, this is nice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anyway.
My daughter is nice. I'm mean. Oh, we should mention Arthur. You know, we work with Arthur Shore.
Yeah.
He's great.
Who are some of the characters? Natalie, did you have schoolmates? Did you have schoolmates that wanted to play parts?
Well, yes, a lot of people wanted to play parts, but it's just in script form because it's a feature length. It's about 100 pages. This is A School of Fish.
Okay.
I was talking about before you started going on
about
rants,
about Arthur.
Because he probably has ADHD.
No, I
want to
talk about
ADHD.
Arthur.
Well, I want to talk about this.
Okay, all right. Talk about Arthur later. Arthur's our script doctor. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, yes, I have like a whole bunch of different characters in it, and what I tried and to do is go completely against like stereotypes in order to.
I'm bored. No, I'm not
gonna go. Stop it, Dad. Okay.
Just smack him, Natalie.
What?
Just smack him.
You should have seen her a couple weeks ago. She almost threw me down the stairs.
That wasn't a few weeks ago. That was a few months ago. I remember. I'm just
kidding. Boy, she wanted to throw me down. Then she tried. She tripped herself.
That's not true.
I'm like a mountain. She can't move me.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So I have a whole bunch of different characters, and it stars my ADHD character, who I've based on people that I, someone that I knew, in a way, in my own personal experience as someone with ADD. And how kind of like the struggles that you go through having to go to do the SATs and stuff, and how it actually doesn't accurately represent intelligence, and that's kind of the whole point of my film is to go against what people think is smart, and that people who can say malinprobs, and you can say
malinprobs.
Who make mistakes with words and stuff can still be intelligent. Like me. And I have a whole bunch of other characters. I have two transgender characters. I have lesbian characters. I have a whole bunch of different characters trying different races and stuff like that also. Just to kind of illustrate that people are not just based on their stereotype, that they are real people, kind of thing. But I also was already a filmmaker, so I was trying to like look at a way to accurately represent people who are normally stereotyped in a way that it's entertaining to watch. So then I can like help people, you know. Yeah. Okay, done.
Okay. Natalie, you I believe you told me that you were 12 when you first started doing these things. Why did you decide to want to direct instead of being an actress or something like that?
Well, because I had experience as an actress, I mean, I liked it. You know, it was fun, but writing and filmmaking, which is more, I felt it in my soul, you know? It sounds really silly, but I felt like I just enjoyed it so much more, and I felt like I just had much more passion for it. Whereas, like, with acting, I liked it, but I didn't quite like it I had a calling to be a filmmaker. So when I did my first film, it's called I Love Him So Much It's Ridiculous. I actually didn't even like boys at that point. It was based off my friend who liked this guy who didn't like her back or whatever. So it was a romantic comedy, and I was basically kind of illustrating the like how
absurd,
absurd it is in teenage love, which is never represented in, which is, at the time, it was almost never, like, shown how silly teenagers can be in...
and since she's 12
well,
years old...
Well, yeah, I mean...
She did see it objectively in a way.
Yeah, since I was 12, it didn't have any romantic feelings. I could see objectively.
I should mention that she was much more sure of herself at 12 years old than at 20.
Well, normally...
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Now you do this, and I want you to, you know, I mean, she was really like, she knew what she wanted. And then you go through the teenage years, and like, you start questioning everything.
Uh-huh.
And then you come back. She's actually knows what she's doing.
Yeah, actually, you know, when I started to not question myself, then I actually started to not question myself and was correct all the time.
Not all the time, Dad. Okay, you sound like me now.
Well, I've actually just put the Amazon link for the rental, or to be able to buy the movie, in the chat room there, so people can go check that out. But why do you? I think I just asked that already. Yeah. What? Why did you actually pick the? No, I asked that also.
Oh.
Well, what was the? Oh, I know what I was going to say earlier.
That's okay.
Well, you know, being a 12-year-old girl that wasn't really interested in boys, you had a good perspective of it, as you happen to mention. But why did you pick that type of romantic film, though?
Wow, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Well, you know, no.
I decided to write it.
Normally,
I guess I was talking to my friend, and I was thinking how absurd it was. And then I just started writing in Final Draft, or maybe I wrote in Word.
I probably gave you Final
you probably,
Draft.
You know,
I said,
probably,
I want you to play with it. You know, I try to show her a lot of things. I'm a guitar player. She hated playing guitar.
I was not a fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, she had a natural thing. So I said, you can play. I can see it. Dad, I think because...
Hurts my fingers.
I was at such a high level. She wanted to be as good as me right away.
Yeah,
and
probably.
She probably was thinking that she was stinking or something. But anyway, so I have no idea, you know. But
whereas filmmaking,
I remember her earlier, like a couple of years before, she was playing around with this.
Oh yeah.
This Powerpuff Girls.
What happened was, they had an actual editing program available for Powerpuff Girls on the Cartoon Network website when I was about 7.
Yes.
So what I did was I made all of these like fight scenes and stuff and edited them. All of them, and like I did a whole bunch of different things, and I really loved doing it. And I would spend a lot of time on that site doing a whole, you know, making little stories up, kind of doing all those different things. So then when I guess when I became 12, I just wrote a script. You probably told me, oh, write something.
Yeah,
and
what happened was
that.
I was amazed how well she was able to edit this, like, this, you know, this Powerpuff thing, and she really was able to just do it. She knew. Yeah, Dad, that looked good. I said, yeah, that's really good. You know, she just had a natural aptitude. I used to love, I think why she also got into filmmaking, because every day I drove her to school, she wanted me to make up a story. And, you know, I say pick two objects and like, say, a house and a banana, you know, then I would write... Think of a story.
From the beginning, middle, and end.
And then every day it was like that. Boy, it killed me after a while.
But you know, Frank and Natalie, a lot of the times, the something that is written for the young people, the young teenagers, or anything like that, is written by adults. It's quite extraordinary to find something that is actually written and produced by a 12-year-old girl.
Oh, thanks. I guess I don't know. Usually, girls like don't get into filmmaking as much, or they're not allowed to get into filmmaking as much.
Oh yeah, that happened. You know,
when
we tried to show it in any class.
Yeah, I was I directed a feature. I directed my short when I was in grammar school.
Seventh grade or something.
Seventh grade, yeah. And I showed it to my whole class, and I was in an all-girl Catholic school. And when I showed it to my class,
people didn't get it.
Yes, I'm telling the story.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
People just looked at it as not even registering that I actually did this. I directed it. I wrote it. I directed it, casted it, and edited it. And no one really registered how I actually did that or really cared.
They didn't even know you did it. They thought this was a film you liked.
Right. Even when I stated that
it didn't register to them that she actually put that film together.
And then later on that year...
Before YouTube days.
It was before YouTube.
I mean, it was during YouTube, but...
I think YouTube was a dating site at that point.
YouTube's been around since 2006, I think.
Yeah, right. So when did you do that? Was that 10 years ago? So that's...
Maybe YouTube was just starting.
Yeah, 2005.
YouTube might have been just starting.
But either way, they weren't getting it that this schoolmate did this film.
And actually, there was a funny thing about that. Later on in the year, I think, or next year or whatever, they made a filmmaking class that
in the school,
and so then people, like my classmates, would try and make their own films and stuff, and then they kind of alienated me from that, even though I knew what I was doing, and then the class kind of just like fiddled away because no one had any understanding how much
they tried doing it. And they had no clue what that was at all.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I was actually going to get into. I'm going to get back into the film here also. I've got a few other questions about that, but just within the last 10 to 15 years, predominantly, there's been a lot of companies that have come out with software to where people will be able to do these types of things themselves instead of spending just huge amounts of money and trying to get funding for a film that just a few decades ago would have cost, even for small films, would have cost, anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million to produce. And now people with just $2,000 or $3,000 or less than $10,000 can buy the cameras and the software and do it themselves and at home.
Yeah, pretty much, but mainly you can do that, but what you have to do is you have to know what you're doing. I mean, you need that good script and those good actors, or that film would be stupid. So even with for instance, I have a new a DVX 200, which is a fantastic camera, the Panasonic. It's over there, man.
Oh,
and you know, if you light it properly, if you do great, it looks as good as something done with a $2 million film. Or a $2 million film, but you have to really know what you're doing. You can't just use this camera and just throw it in a room, or you can't just have a script that's just half-ass, and think you're gonna come up with something good. Everything has to be all put together correctly.
Right, of course. Organization also.
I think it's script, acting,
and organization
are the three main elements. Yeah. Of making a really good film.
Maybe we could talk about the 70 beat outline, and then
You want to hear about the 70 beat outline at all?
Yeah, I'm not even sure what you're talking about there, but
okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. So
this is about script structure.
So basically, to make a feature length film, you have a 70 beat outline, which is just basically the structure of the script, organizing the plot. Strictly the plot.
The platform, you mean, right?
It's like the composition of the film. It's like writing one long composition.
Yeah, for the big multi million, $100 million, $200 million, $300 million productions, they that film in different countries and stuff like that. They they might film all the scenes in one country or one part of town or something, and then those actual scenes might be 45 minutes apart from each other or an hour apart from each other. But
yeah.
once they edit and cut everything, it's all seamless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you put it in the right spot.
Yeah.
I love about films, the magic of it. You know, like you open up a door and, you know, one scene is in one location, and you open the door up, and you could be 10 miles away because, you know, the different. It's just a lot of fun.
A door and there's like this beautiful garden, and in reality it was just like it was just a bathroom.
This is a closet door.
Right, or a bathroom.
Yeah. And so you cut right to the garden, and it's really, you know.
And the garden's actually like in Utah, you know, when you're set in New York.
But I like to shoot film simply. You know, I don't like to make it difficult. I don't believe in, you know, setting up a tremendous amount of light to have a guy drink a cup of coffee. I mean, I think it's just a waste of time.
A cup of coffee.
You know.
Yeah. It's a Brooklyn accent coming out there.
Yeah, you know, I think. I don't want to be bad, but I'll be bad here.
Don't be bad.
Okay.
Please.
No, I think a lot of people think that filmmaking has to be hard, but it doesn't. I think they try to make it harder than it really is. It's a camera, actors, and organization, and your script. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, to light it properly. I mean, you know, you can learn all this stuff very quickly.
Do you
it's
use?
It's not like playing guitar. You know, it takes you 10 years to be bad. You know?
do you utilize green screen technology and put scenes in there?
I don't do that. No. I have maybe someday I'll like to do that. You know, but I love green screen stuff. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, if it's done properly, it's great.
Yeah. So whose actual idea was it for Paraplegic?
Oh, that was Dad.
Yeah, it was just a name. You know, and I told Arthur and
Arthur Shore,
and he said, "Frank, that's a great name. That's like the best name I've heard." You know, because, and I said, "You know, it's basically a guy in a wheelchair who has telekinesis, paraplegic." You know?
Yeah, hence the name.
And then I wrote the script around the name. You know, which is kind of funny.
What?
Yeah, it's happened, I guess, a few times.
Yeah. Was there any kind of inspiration that you drew upon for the plot or the actual script itself?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, my inspiration is more Twilight Zone, you know, Outer Limits, old movies. I use a lot of them, and then I've thrown like things like RoboCops, you know. Star Wars. I throw in the kitchen sink and all this stuff. I mean, if anybody
there's
knows,
there's a lot of references.
I mean, but nobody, you know, there's not as many movie buffs as I am to know. I mean, I have things that are from.
I think South Park, the creators of South Park, have a lot of like.
Yeah,
references.
Yeah. They have a lot of references to South Park.
Even Bob's Burgers too.
But nobody will know what I'm meaning. Like when he, like for instance, his brain power develops in the movie from using the brain scan system. So he develops telekinesis from that, and that's basically from the crawl of a forbidden planet. And I, you know, when I wrote that, I didn't realize I was doing all this stuff, you know, and, you know, it's all subconscious. And a lot of stuff, a lot of guys who are in their 50s and 60s, they say, "Hey, Frank, that reminds me of the Twilight Zone or the Outer Limits or something." I say, "Yeah, it's kind of more on that style than anything." And I like that, you know, because I like referring back then. I'd rather be compared to that than, say, John Carpenter or somebody like that. You know, I mean, I love those guys too, but I'd rather be compared to that, those people back then.
Yeah, we love black and white, hence the screen.
Yeah, I love black and white.
I was wondering about that, actually, why you don't have a color screen or a color video camera.
Well, you know what? No, we have a color. I just turn it down. I don't like I like
that. That's what I said. Exactly. Yeah. Hence the screen.
You know, I mean, I feel like, you know, if I can get away with black and white at any time, I would just do that. You know, I mean, one of the great movies, The Artist, is all black and white. You know, that movie.
The Artist.
Old style movie. And we met a great guy, Dan, who actually signed that movie. He's a really great guy.
Yeah, he was awesome. Yeah, and a big cool. Back to the Future fan.
Yeah, he's
fan.
A big Back to the
great.
Future, and she. Yeah, so we might be talking about our future projects with him. That'd be nice.
So, what actually got you started and interested into filmmaking, Frank?
What made me?
Yeah.
Oh, I love. I'm a film fan. Well, yeah, I'm a real film fan. You know, I love movies since I was a little kid. You know, science fiction. I was really always into science fiction when I was a kid. Science fiction and horror. But I think it was mainly science fiction, if you think about it. Yeah, I mean, especially. I did like Alfred Hitchcock Hour and all those things. But you know, but like things like. You know, out of space movies and all that. That I loved that when I was a kid. And then I went to horrors like in the 70s and 80s. I liked the horrors too, but I think it's science fiction. I love science. And one of the reasons why I get into technology, I'm a real gear nut. You know, I'll buy anything that has dials and knobs on it. You know,
oh my God.
Computers kind of bore me because it's just like one screen with things on it. I like objects. You know, I have a cappuccino machine. Lots of dials and knobs on it. You know, like and you know, like even this guitar here. I love this guitar.
Oh my gosh,
that
one moment.
I'm not gonna play. This is a new. Was the
airline? No one can see it.
It's an airline guitar, but here it is. It's like this guitar has all kinds of knobs and you know three pickups and you know whammy bar and all that stuff. And I love that guitar. It plays really nice too. And so I'm really into a lot of different kinds of guitars and. And my computers, I like computers just mainly as tools. And, of course, we love the programs. You know, I use Premiere.
Premiere's great.
And I use, I love...
Adobe Premiere?
RSX
yeah,
and all
Adobe
that.
Premiere.
Yeah.
And I remember using Premiere in my old films. I'm a PC guy, so... And everybody used to, you know, say to me like 10 years ago, why do you use Premiere? It's like, that's like the not professional program. I said, why? It works.
I like it better.
You have real time effects and all that stuff. And they say, oh no, you have to do Final Cut. And now I guess now Premiere is the Premiere program.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
10 years later, you know.
Yep.
I listen to filmmakers.
I'm thinking it was. I'm thinking Premiere was probably ahead of its time. Although I don't even know how to use it. I think I have it somewhere, but I haven't figured out how to use it yet. But
It's not hard, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, all you need is somebody to show you a little bit, and they say, "Oh."
Yeah, and there's always tutorials online.
And it makes sense.
I got to tell you, those people that make up the tutorials on YouTube, they just go way too fast, and they're not really explaining stuff and. It's just hard for me anyways, but what kind of music did you play? Or what kind of music do you play? Are you an old rock and roller?
Well, yeah, I'm a real rock and roller, you know, and I do a lot of alternative kind of weird stuff, too. You know, it's kind of fun. I like John Borry and ELO, you know, who else? I don't know, I love the Beatles, of course. And System of
the
Down.
Kinks.
Kinks, oh, bro.
The Kinks, yeah, that's a good old band.
And System of the Down,
System of the Down
you know,
and Steam Powered Giraffe.
Steam Powered Giraffe, those
it's a really
guys.
Cool
did,
new band.
And of course, Green Day. Oh boy, I love every time I hear Green Day song, I freak out. And I have to start writing more music now. I mainly just write music for my own films and stuff like that. So. But now I want to start, you know,
I've been like making you listen to System of a Down because I'm always playing it all the time. And then he's like, man, stop writing.
Yeah, I hear stuff. I just want to start writing.
Rock and roll
again, yeah. Start my own band.
Yeah, got to start writing music.
I used to have a lot of bands in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I played Lower Manhattan a lot, CDs and all that stuff.
And people don't realize CDs been around a long, long time.
What's that?
CDs.
People don't realize that CDs have been around a long time.
Oh, CB. I meant to say CBGBs.
Oh. What is that?
I'm sorry. I said CBs. I should have said CBGBs.
What is that?
But, you know, when we're here in the city, we just, hey, you're going to CBs, you know. You're going to say CBGBs. You know, say,
is that a place to play?
I played in that place a few times. I played in the Bitter End a lot, and I guess a place called the Cat Club and all those places. The Limelight. That's a way back one.
I didn't know that.
So
That must be in the city there?
Yeah, we're doing this forever, this stuff.
CBGB's must be in the city there?
Yeah, it was on the Bowery. It's gone now.
Yeah, they closed down.
Okay.
Yeah, Hilly, the guy who owned it, died. And then I guess nobody kept up with it, you know. And before CB's, it was Max's Kansas City. I think Max's might actually still be around. Or they reopened or something. Who knows?
I was really surprised, and, well, probably not so much surprised, but a lot of the bands still just tour and tour, and that's all they do. They don't even write new music or anything. They just do all the old stuff they did that they've done for 30, 40, and 50 years. And they're still just as popular as they ever was 30, 40, and 50 years ago.
Yeah, I'm sure, but I don't go to those concerts.
No?
I'd rather see the Stones in a small club than...
Yeah, than a big old stadium or something like that, huh?
It's the band, you know. I remember playing on the Lower East Side. There was so many great bands back then. That was a lot of fun back then. But, you know, I'm having a lot of fun now with this... what's happening to us, me and my daughter now. You know, paraplegics should do pretty well. And write some good reviews, everybody, if you see.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Well, I'd have to watch the movie first to write a review.
Okay, yeah.
I'd have to get up a nerve to watch it.
Yeah, it's not that, it's not scary. It's more of a gang movie. You know, it's like a RoboCop. It's like RoboCop meets Panic Room. You know,
yeah.
It's drama, pretty much. I mean, there's more than one room in it, but 45 minutes of the film is really in a small room. Before we shot it, I was worried whether this was going to be exciting or not, being in one room. And I shot it a certain way.
There's enough killings to make it exciting.
I shot it within the middle of the room as opposed to using sticks. Normally, they would shoot on the sides of the room. And so I felt like to make you more within the action of the film, you feel like you're within the film, like you're a member, like you were there experiencing it. And instead of shooting it as an observer, I mean, I do shoot it as an observer, but the way I shot it was that way. I shot it at pretty much all angles and all that stuff, but it was mainly from the center of the room out to give it that more of that action look to it, because it could have been very boring if you shot it a certain way, similar to. The way you see something on a stage, you know, when you look at something on a stage, it's really one room, and then you ever see those cameras that are there, and then you just see the stage. And it could be really a great play, can look terrible because it's shot like
that.
Yeah.
So I was really concerned about that before I shot Power of Music. So I decided to shoot it from the middle out.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I will tell you, as I suspected, once the sun went down, your lighting is a whole lot better than what it was earlier on.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it wasn't very good looking when the sun was still out, but it's a lot better now.
Oh, good, I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, we've got just a couple minutes left here. Would you like to say anything else, or about the movie, or about?
I mean, it's hard to talk about yourself. No, that's not about yourself.
Dad, it's really easy for you.
It's really easy.
We're
really happy to work on that. Our next film, I want to get a real known actor in it, you know, just for a few minutes, and you know, to pick up the level of popularity of any of our films after this. And I do this stuff all with my own money. I don't even bother doing Kickstarter or any of that stuff. It's very complicated. It gets very complicated, and even trying to raise money. And then once you start raising money, everybody has control of you and your film. And then you have to do things a certain way. It's like ridiculous. You know, you have to get all these people unnecessary things to put in the film to spend that money. I mean, basically, you can make one film $50,000, or you have $750,000, and it will be the same film. It's just that you'll hire 10 more people or 20 more people. I mean, basically, it will be the same film. You know, so you have to know how to spend the money. And, you can spend $10,000 on the house for that month, or you can spend $1,000 for that, the house down the block for a month. And you have to know how to do it. And I've seen people have $20,000 for a short film. And you see the short film, and you say, what did they spend the money on? I mean, it's a house with four actors. They never paid the actors. That's another thing. That pisses me off.
No, we always pay our actors.
We always pay the actors.
The actors, they're the ones who are the spokespeople
for your film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, your actor doesn't come that day. What do you do? I mean, that actor leaves, you're done. You know, I mean, what are you going to do now?
That's it for the day, yeah. Yep.
You know, I'm sorry to say, you know, if your cameraman doesn't come, you know, there's always somebody who can run a camera.
Yep.
You know, everybody's, you know, I mean, I know so much about it, so I can tell the guy what to do with the camera.
Yeah.
Another kid, a kid who's, he knows some basic stuff. And, I know how it should be
learned. I learned how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard. She's a very good photographer. She actually got better than me.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Frank and Natalie, that's the end there.
Okay.
Thank you for coming on. It's been interesting. The trailer was definitely interesting, and if I do get the nerve up to watch a movie, I will. I'll let you know.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We hope so.
Okay. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
And have a good night. All right, everyone. That's the end here. So I'll see everyone Sunday after Vin. Thanks for coming out, and thanks for staying up. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this has been Can't Slick a Ball. Good night, everyone.